Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, and guide to all things cinematic. He joins us weekly. We are going to remember Martin Landau and George A. Romero, and the film is going to be Dunkirk. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you doing?
I am all right.
Well, I am very glad to hear that. And I'm all right, too, although it is a shame to lose two very talented people, Martin Landau and George Romero, who both died within just the past few days. So I thought it might be nice to say a fond farewell here on Films in Focus. Martin Landau was an actor and a very great actor, and he was not a movie star actor. He was a character actor. And it seems that right now people are remembering him largely for a couple of performances, and I have to agree, out of all the jillions of performances that he gave, many of which were very, very fine, and of course remain very, very fine because they're in movies and we can go on seeing them forever, as long as we're still around. The two that are being most remembered, I think, are justly so. One of them is Ed Wood from 1994. It's a movie about which, you know, it's a good movie. It is certainly not a great movie of any sort, in my opinion, directed by Tim Burton, one of Burton's better movies, not necessarily one of his best, but it was the story of Edward D. Wood Jr., a real life, this fictionalized version of the real life and career of this movie maker who is regarded for having made movies very, very cheaply and not very well. He was not a good filmmaker, but he loved movies and he was a very eccentric character himself. And in that movie, Johnny Depp plays Edward D. Wood Jr., but Wood made some movies with the great Bela Lugosi, and Martin Landau plays Bela Lugosi, and it is the old Lugosi near the end of his days. And he died. He wasn't all that old when he died. He had a terrible drug problem back in the old Hollywood days. And Landau plays Lugosi, and it is just a beautiful, compassionate performance, very sympathetic in every way and very lovely. And if anybody hasn't seen it, I just really do recommend catching up with it. It's a beautiful piece of work. And the other movie is one of the great films, one of the great films of the 50s, and the 50s are arguably the greatest of all decades for American film, North by Northwest, the very great Alfred Hitchcock classic, which is full of action and adventure and humor. It's just a superb film in all respects, North by Northwest. And the stars of it are the great Cary Grant and the great James Mason and the wonderful Eva Marie Saint. And once again, we have Martin Landau in a character role. He plays the villain of the piece. The chief villain is played by James Mason. And Martin Landau plays his lieutenant. And this is a movie from 1959. So it is pretty clear in the movie that the lieutenant is meant to be a gay man, but you couldn't say people were gay back in the movies in 1959. And so it's sort of indirectly implied. And Landau does the most marvelously subtle, again, sympathetic, empathetic job of making this villainous guy into a real human being, even though it's a limited role. It's a character part. It's a secondary role in the movie, and conveying the sense that he is a gay man without making this a part of his villainy. Anyway, it's a remarkable achievement and one of the really memorable performances of the 50s, in my opinion. So I really wanted to give a tip of the hat to Martin Landau. He just died at the age of 89, which is a pretty ripe old age, and I'm very glad that he made it that long. And he kept working for a very, very long time. He was working in fact, when he died, and I don't mean he dropped dead in front of the movie camera, but I mean he was still involved in actively acting, and he will definitely be missed. A wonderful, wonderful character. So the other person I want to bid a fond farewell to is George A. Romero, who is, again, everybody who is remembering him now is remembering him as the guy who gave us the modern zombie movie. Zombie movies go back many, many decades. There's a very good one from the 1930s. It's called White Zombie. But it was Night of the Living Dead by George A. Romero, which arrived in 1968 and really launched what we now think of as the phenomenal zombie movie craze. Vampires were always a lot more popular than zombies, and they're still popular. But zombies really became the monster of choice after Night of the Living Dead. I remember when I saw Night of the Living Dead, I was sort of walking down the street. I was living in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the time. We had a very fine sort of art movie theater there, and I saw on the marquee they were showing some movie I had not heard about called Night of the Living Dead. And I thought, well, now that sounds like a horror movie, and I really like horror movies, so maybe I should check that out. So I did. I went in, and I saw it, and I was completely floored by it. And by the way, I've seen it many times since, and I've used it in teaching and so forth, and it never loses its power. Made on a very, very low budget, made in Pittsburgh, which is where Romero was from, and just a B movie that is at the very, very highest level of what B movies can be, an extraordinary achievement. Now, it was interesting. George wanted to break away early in his career from horror movies. Night of the Living Dead, again, put him on the map most assuredly. And he made then a movie called Martin. Very, very interesting movie, which came out about, this was a few movies later in 1978, which is about a young man who may or may not be a vampire. He may be a vampire, or he may just be some sort of a demented person who thinks he is a vampire. Never really resolved over the course of the movie. And it sort of was George kind of trying to stretch a little bit out of the horror movie mold. And then in 1978, he made a sequel to Night of the Living Dead called Dawn of the Dead. And then in 81, he made a movie called Night Riders, which is not a horror movie. And it was his attempt to really break out and make different kind of movies and become a full sort of generalist filmmaker who made all different kinds of films. Night Riders did not work out. And after that, George was cautious. He stayed pretty much entirely within the horror movie realm. He completed his original zombie trilogy, which he had planned with Day of the Dead in 1985. And after that, he kind of busied himself doing other things other than directing movies and making an occasional remake and that sort of thing. And his career did not continue to be particularly stellar. But his achievement in creating one genuine masterpiece, which is Night of the Living Dead, I don't think the other parts of the Dead trilogy are as strong as that. And again, introducing what became a really long and lasting trend of zombies being the monster of choice in American horror movies and to some extent in world horror movies. He really deserves to be remembered for that. And I asked him once, why is it, George, that why do we go to horror movies? Why do we go movies full of things that if we saw them in real life or encountered them in real life or anywhere remotely near them in real life, we would absolutely be horrified and maybe never get over it? And he just sort of thought for a moment. He said, why do we go through winters? You know, why do we live in places where we have to go through all that? But we do. We sort of choose to. So there does seem to be, and this is now me sort of extrapolating from what he said, we do seem to need to experience the hard things in life. Maybe they make the nice things in life seem even nicer. And maybe going to horror movies is one of the ways that we do that. In any case, Night of the Living Dead remains a great legacy for him. And I'm sorry he's gone. So turning from the past into the present, let us talk a bit about Dunkirk. Dunkirk is by Christopher Nolan. A very interesting filmmaker. I mean interesting. He's not one of my absolute favorite filmmakers, but he certainly tries to stretch his talent in a lot of different directions and does a lot of interesting things in some of his films, some really quite remarkable things. And Dunkirk is a war movie, and it's a real war movie. It falls squarely into that genre. And he sometimes does fall squarely into genres. I mean, one of his best-known achievements, Christopher Nolan, is his Batman trilogy, The Dark Knight Rises, and so forth. They're good movies. I don't think they're great movies. They're good movies. They have a great cult following. I don't think they're quite as good as to deserve a large cult following, but they have one. And actually, I think he did some of his most interesting work way back very early in his career when he made really some movies that really broke molds of of many different kinds. Memento, which is a story, a film which tells its story in reverse. It's about a man with no memory, no short-term memory. He cannot remember anything. And he is the central character of this movie, which then tells its own story in reverse. I don't think it's a great movie, but it more or less succeeds at the extraordinary thing that it sets out to do. His Batman trilogy, Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises, which are interesting movies, and a couple more science fiction movies. Inception, very, very ambitious and very multi-layered story with all kinds of twists and turns, and Interstellar, which is his most recent film before now. And I must say that I find Interstellar to be quite overblown. It's an enormously long movie that tells a very ambitious story, and it has some interesting aspects and some aspects that I think don't quite work. But again, it shows him trying to sort of stretch the boundaries of a genre, which he also did with Inception, which is also a science fiction film. Dunkirk, again, is a pretty straight-ahead war movie, although it has kind of the Chris Nolan touch. It is the story of the evacuation of Dunkirk, and at the very beginning we have some on-screen text that sets the scene, and it's pretty well-known stuff anyway, that we have a whole lot of Allied soldiers from various Allied countries, and they are at the sea in Dunkirk in Britain, and they are hoping for, as the opening text puts it, a miracle to somehow get them out before the Germans positively blitz them and bomb them and kill every single one of them. So that is the setting of the scene of the story. And at the very beginning, we are introduced to the three different venues in which the story will be played out. Some of it takes place on a beach, which is called in the movie The Mole, where an enormous number of soldiers are sort of hunkered down and hoping to be rescued. And then another part of it takes place on the sea, and that part focuses primarily on a civilian craft piloted by Mark Rylance, one of the finest actors that we have around right now, and who is sort of jumping in as a volunteer to help out with the war effort. And then a third part takes place in the air, where we have a whole bunch of World War II style planes flying around and dropping bombs and trying to shoot each other down and that sort of thing. So there's a tremendous amount of action in this movie on air, land, and sea. And there are some very, very fine actors, and I'm going to repeat Mark Rylance, who certainly made the most impression on me. There's other people in it, though, like Tom Hardy is in it, and all kinds of others. So the action of Dunkirk sometimes is kind of confusing. It really is. It cuts together these three different, again, air, land, and sea, and it is very ambitious in the way that it ultimately brings all these things together, knits them together. But sometimes it's a little hard to piece together exactly what is happening simultaneously with what else, and that kind of thing. But the basic story itself is really quite compelling, even though it's not a tightly woven narrative. We do have certain characters that we follow over the course of the movie, and they give it a certain psychological interest. And what is ultimately most inspiring and lovely and wonderful about the movie is the fact that a lot of people who were not in the military, particularly a lot of people with civilian boats, who helped to evacuate soldiers, and sailors and air people and all this, even though they did not have to, they did this as just a sort of a patriotic and a human and a humane enterprise. And this is really quite wonderful to see. And there's all kinds of unexpected twists and turns along the way, and again, some very wonderful performance. Now, Christopher Nolan is a very, very gifted filmmaker, and he really knows what he's doing. And one of the things that he believes in, and I know this because I talked with him a little bit about this a year or two ago, is making movies on film. He believes that it's all very wonderful the way people make things now in all kinds of digital media, and he believes that there ought to be every opportunity to do that and to even have your film shown digitally in theaters, which is almost always the case now. But he made Dunkirk all the way from start to finish on film, and he firmly believes in film. I don't think that's quite as big a deal as he makes it out to be. Today's digital technologies can be quite wonderful, and I think that Dunkirk works perfectly well when you see it in a movie theater that is projecting it digitally. That said, Nolan is a film purist, and my hat is off to him. And I think that it is very nice that he, as a British filmmaker, made this movie about this really important British event out of World War II, and that he made it on film, which is, after all, a medium that has deep roots in our culture. And I am glad that, in his way, he is staying as loyal to it as he possibly can. So Dunkirk is a movie that I don't recommend if you don't like war movies, because it really is that. In fact, it's a combat movie. Most of it involves things directly related to combat. If that's the kind of movie you like, this will be perhaps the movie of the year for you. If not, still a really good picture, lots of action, lots of adventure, very involving, and I actually had a pretty interesting time watching it. So that is my somewhat married story this week, Jill.